Thank you to Tom and Dan for the hospitality in the West Coast studios of Premier Radio Network tonight, giving George Norrie a well-deserved night off. This is Ian Punnett on Coast to Coast AM, and what a beautiful night it is on the West Coast. So what a beautiful night it is for some great radio. No matter where you are, you're going to want to stick around. There are so many stories to get to before we get to open lines. And a quick plug, too, for tomorrow night on Coast to Coast. It's Zombie Night. And you're going to want to know more about the theories of international politics and zombies. What would a zombie apocalypse mean for our governmental systems? You know, if corpses reanimate across the globe, they are a threat to all countries, and all countries must consider that in crafting their foreign and national security policies, so says Professor Daniel Dresner. And he has some suggestions. Given the situation as it exists right now, some governments will be better placed to repulse the zombie invasion than others. We'll talk about the international implications of politics and zombies tomorrow night, Saturday night, on Coast to Coast, my usual night. Looking forward to open lines coming up. We got some weird news to get to before we do, though. Looking forward to a couple of stories, including an update on the Japanese power plant situation before we get to open lines. And the Wolf Files. Buck Wolf will join us here in just a second and take a run through the weird news going on right now at AOL. Next on Coast to Coast, this is Ian Punnett. Well, if you're ever looking for some great news stories that might bend a little toward the weird, there's two websites I can always recommend. CoastToCoastAM.com. Fabulous job by Lex and Sean and others. And I should mention that there's some great stories up there tonight, too. For example, is that really a sheep dog born in China? Half sheep, half dog? Go look at the photo. Decide for yourself. And is that really a Bigfoot captured with the blurry cell phone camera in North Carolina? Is that really Nobby, the North Carolina Bigfoot? Nobby. I don't know about that one. If you look at the video, it's very quick. You gotta focus on it. You may have to stop it a couple of times. You may have to do a breakdown analysis. You know, get back to us coming up when we're doing open lines. But you go look at that video. We looked it up. We linked it up at coasttocoastam.com of supposedly Nobby the Bigfoot crossing the highway in North Carolina. It's just the way Nobby is walking that makes me suspicious. Nobby seems to have the distinct gait of somebody who's wearing their dad's slippers. Try not to have them fall off their feet as they go across the street. You'll see what I'm talking about. And then, of course, the other great website to go to catch up on the latest weird news is the Weird News File at AOLnews.com. And the man who's in charge of that joins us, Buck Wolf. Good evening, Buck.
Good evening, Ian.
The book that you have, The Wolf Files, Adventures in Weird News, is also available. You can link up to that at coasttocoastam.com. And I was just there looking at a couple of the stories. Pole dancing for Jesus. We'll hear more about Sammy Hagar talking about his alien abduction, and we have that to share on the way in just a minute. But I don't see the video of Nobby from North Carolina. Have you already run that on Weird News?
Yes, that was earlier. That was Thursday. But I have to say, it was a big story for us. A lot of people wanted to look at it, and a lot of people were kind of disappointed. It looked like a guy who wandered out of a costume party, perhaps looking for the bathroom.
Yeah, he did look like he had to pee. It kept the knees together kind of the whole time, a distinct shuffle like somebody in an emergency toward a tree. So you go take a look, coasttocoastam.com. You can link up to it from there. I had heard, but I hadn't read the details about the pole dancing for Jesus story. Buck Wolf, what's the detail? What are the details there?
Well, it's a church group in Texas, and they exercise twice a month, and they don't separate their pole dancing from their appreciation of the Lord, and they don't see any contrast, any wrinkle in the rules. And I would say they don't do anything obscene, but the whole idea of pole dancing and having it done in a religious class It's funny as hell.
Okay, you know what? I'm just looking at the video right now at AOLnews.com, and all I can say is praise Jesus.
Yes.
So, Sammy Hagar, we have the audio here to share. The story is, and I'm going to read it right from your website, Sammy Hagar, 63-year-old Rock and Roll Hall of Fame inductee, thinks he may have been manipulated in some way by a force not of this earth, if not abducted by aliens. And the headline for that story to me is, Sammy Hagar, 63? Oh, my God. I didn't know he was 63.
Time's passed.
I guess. So we have a little bit of to share. Did you talk to Sammy Hagar yourself?
Well, what happened was he's pushing this book, his rock memoir.
Right.
It's called Red, My Uncensored Life in Rock. And he did an interview for MTV, and he admitted that in the 1960s, he was abducted. He is very sure that he was. He was kept this for a while. He's also talked and written a lot about science issues and space issues in his music. And what came out in the MTV show was so shocking that we sent a reporter to his house in California for follow-up, because it was left open whether this was just a bad dream or whether this actually happened. And what you'll hear in this tape that we got from that he actually believes in UFOs, he believes he was abducted, and he is yet another famous person who's come out who said something extraordinary like this.
Well, let's run it here, right now, Sammy Hagar talking about his alien abduction on Coast to Coast. Go ahead.
I'm a believer. I believe in God. I believe in aliens. I believe in Elvis. But I would much rather hear there's life all over this universe, because, you know, if this whole thing was created by God, which I believe in God, you go, we're not the only ones. Trust me, pal. And those people that think we are, they're the crazy ones. Don't call me crazy.
What do you think happened to you as a kid? Because you recall pretty vividly in a dream.
Oh, it was vivid as hell, man. It was just like, you know, you wake up in the morning, you remember your whole dream. Some mornings you wake up and you go, wow, man, I had a weirdest dream. I can't really remember it. But sometimes I didn't wake up. I was waking up. I was awakened from this dream. But in today's technology, it seems like it was a download or upload situation. And we were connected in some kind of way. And either they were downloading or uploading. I don't know. I don't know.
Have you ever seen anything else the rest of your life? Any kind of UFO? Or have you?
Oh, no. Things in the sky. I've seen weird things in the sky, absolutely. But nothing like, you know, I could take a picture of and say, oh, wow, that was a UFO. I want to so bad. But no, I haven't, never. It's always been in a experience, you know, dreams, something, a memory pops into my head. Wow, like something happened that I can't quite remember type thing. Mm-hmm. Just things like that. But I've read probably 35, 40 books on the subject, and that's kind of the way it rolls. You know, everybody that's had that experience, they all talk about it like that, like either they block out their memory or you have just a faint memory, or you actually, a couple people remember the thing like what I did. I remembered. They didn't get disconnected quick enough. I caught them.
Okay. So I'm all about Sammy Hagar. I go back to Sammy Hagar, actually to the Red album, the very first time I think I ever sat down with the Sammy Hagar album. Liked his Van Hagar stuff. Not so sure some of those flashbacks may all be related to an alien abduction. I think he's been to a few flashback-inducing activities in his life where...
rock memoirs are usually sex, drugs, and rock and roll. And if you thumb through his book, you will find plenty of each.
Right.
He actually vividly describes tents that Van Halen had under the stage for the way they would consort with their female fans.
Oh, gosh, how about that?
And that's the life.
Yeah.
But he was very, very, very vivid in his descriptions. I mean, he says that, you know, it was real. They were plugged into me. This is from MTV. It was a download situation where they were uploading something to my brain like an experiment. It's very strange because that was in 1966, 67, before computer uploading and downloading was really a popular thing. So it's kind of strange. Of course, he's recalling it in 2011.
Modern time. But, you know, it also sounded a little bit kind of familiar. Wasn't that a little bit like the imagery that Charlie Sheen was just using about downloading his brain and people exploding. And well, anyway, so I'll say this. I used to do morning rock radio for years, and Sammy Hagar was one of the nicest guys I've ever met backstage. One of the most congenial. He went out of his way to make even the smallest fans get a moment with the band and to get Eddie's attention. And he was very cool. So I always appreciate him for that. We're talking with Buck Wolf, AOL Weird News. I just happened to click onto your story about Nobby, the North Carolina Bigfoot.
Yes.
And I have to say, now that I look at your version of the story, or Lee Spiegel, your contributor.
Our excellent contributor, yes.
Yeah. He says here that Thomas Byers of Shelby, North Carolina, contacted the local TV station after he videotaped a 7-foot-tall, 300-pound, 6-toed Bigfoot from 15 to 20 feet away.
How do we know 6 toes?
6 toes. How do you know that from 50? You couldn't tell if I had 6 toes from 20 feet away.
Right. And a lot of people actually have 6 toes.
Right.
Not a lot, but it's not unheard of.
But it's at night, too. I mean, this is dark. I don't get it. But anyway, you can go take a look at that. We've linked up the video at coasttocoastam.com. What else is in weird news tonight, Buck Wolf?
Well, we loved earlier this week, we had a story about a guy who retooled road signs in South Carolina. Those are these electric signs that blink as you go by, that when there might be some road work to warn you to slow down. Instead of saying construction ahead, these signs in North Carolina said zombies ahead. That's what they were pointing.
Well, that's a good time for me to plug tomorrow night's show on Coast to Coast, because someday there will be zombies ahead. Someday there will be a zombie apocalypse, and we'll talk about whether or not the government will be prepared for that and what type of government reaction should there be to the zombie apocalypse, especially because some governments will handle that better than others. And there are international implications for both trade, for health, for future wars that all have to do with the reanimated dead. Coming up tomorrow night on Coast to Coast. So, you know, I mean, there's always sad stories about people who have sort of unusual problems, like the one-eyed baby, the Cyclops baby that died. And it's just so tragic. I can't even think about it. But then you see this other story, and I can't quite figure it out. It's on your website tonight. You can link up to it through coasttocoastam.com. The man with backward feet. Now, this is a real guy?
This man can actually turn his feet 120 degrees around. He is, his name is Moses Lehman, and he is leaving the country right now to go to Italy for a Guinness show. He keeps a low profile. He's from Monroe, Michigan, and he will be featured on a Guinness show there. And he can walk quite a bit backwards. He is comfortable with his feet turned almost all the way around as he is with his feet forward. And when he does some shows, my reporter Mark Hartzman met up with him in Indianapolis about a month ago at a fundraiser for a church that was sending a mission over to Africa. He can dress up, put clothes on backwards, so the zipper's actually in the back, and the shirt and the buttons are in the back, and you can't tell whether he's coming or going.
Right. You know, actually, my right ankle looked a lot like that about 8 weeks ago, and it required a major amount of surgery to get it to go back the other direction. I can't believe he can just do that at will. I had to, I'm still walking with a cane after blowing my ankle out just before Christmas. So what is the Guinness measurement for? What record do they have for such a thing? What's the record for what?
Well, he's going to attempt to go 20 meters with his feet turned backwards, which
okay.
He attempts to do in 30 feet. And the first is just to turn his feet around a full 120 degrees, and he'll do this on camera.
Okay, but do they have a record of like 25 seconds or 25 feet?
He's establishing
a record.
This is a baseline record.
And there's a good chance that there never will be anybody else that can ever take the record from him.
I disagree with you there.
Really?
Because this seems to be a genetic thing, and his son has the same sort of skill that he has. His son isn't as good as him at this, but then again, he's a younger man. Maybe give him some time practicing
right.
The backward routine. he can take his father's act one step further.
Yeah, so to speak. You know, it's interesting about the that record, though. He could probably go 100 feet, couldn't he? I mean, he could go for, what is, why is he stopping at just 30 feet?
Well, I guess it's part of the show. And,
okay. So he's just ready to break his own record should someone challenge him. He wants to leave a little room.
There's a little showmanship involved, I'm
okay.
sure.
All right. Yeah. All of these stories are linked up at coasttocoastam.com. If you go to Weird News, the Wolf Files, Buck Wolf, the Wolf Files, Adventures in Weird News. I don't have this book, but I love books like this. Do you have a favorite, like a top three favorite Weird News stories of all time?
Well, I do love the story about how I threw Bozo out of the Clown Hall of Fame.
Wait. Bozo as in Bozo the Clown?
Yes.
You know, before you go, my first professional job in television was writing sketches for Bozo Circus.
Which Bozo show is that? Where
the one out of Chicago with Bob Bell.
The great one.
Yeah, yeah. The great Bozo. I wrote, and I'm proud to say, I wrote the famous Banana Bandit sketch with Cookie the Clown and Golly the Gorilla. So I got paid $25. I was in college. But I
tell you something. The guy who owned Bozo was inducted into the Clown Hall of Fame. His name was Larry Harmon.
Right.
And he described himself as the original Bozo in his application. And someone told me in a bar that he actually, like, bought his Bozo routine with a non-disclosure act. And I did the investigation, and I looked at his application for the Clown Hall of Fame, and I found out that, in fact, he was not honest. He actually bought that act off of a person who was employed by Capitol Records, Pinto Colvig, and also Alan Livingston, who did a lot of the creative work. And I got Larry Harmon removed, and it was a big clown controversy. We
had
arguments on a bunch of radio shows and on TV shows, and CBS actually called me the butcher of Bozo.
Didn't know that. How did I miss that story? I know that Larry Harmon had a reputation. I don't know if this is fair or not, but he had a reputation as being Larry the Sewer. He would sue anybody. Anybody that used Bozo, used an image of Bozo, used the word Bozo, said you're a Bozo. He owned the word Bozo, right?
Larry Harmon's lawyer has called me.
Has he?
Oh yeah, it's not pretty.
Okay, but isn't that true though? I mean, he that was the reputation at least for a period of time. All right, so give me one other in the time we have. One other of your favorite stories that are in the Wolf Files: Adventures in Weird News.
I interviewed a man named Adolf Hitler.
Oh, come on,
Adolf Hitler. Yes, he was a cab driver in Italy. He was about the same age. This is in the 1980s. He was. And it said on his license plate, Adolf Hitler, spelt slightly differently with one T rather than two.
Okay.
Wait.
He spelled it with two T's.
Yes.
Okay, good. Just went checking. And so he spelled it with two T's, and he was no relation to the Adolf Hitler.
He was no relation to the real Adolf Hitler. He was just born around the same time because, you know, after World War II, Adolf became a far less popular name,
yeah,
for
exactly.
obvious reasons.
Yeah.
But he did not want to insult his family or his parents by changing his name afterwards, so he kept the same name. And he went on living his life. He was a bus driver for a while, so he'd get on a bus and you'd see a sign above the driver that says, "I am your bus driver, Adolf Hitler," blah, 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 blah.
All right, how about that? Well, there's a reason why he wasn't known as Adolf Lundgren, that's for sure. He just went with Dolph. Very good. Thank you, Buck Wolf. The Wolf Files, Adventures in Weird News is the book, and it's weirdnews@AOL.com. Thank you so much for that, getting us started on a great night of open line calls. Before we get to those on the way, though, on Coast to Coast, why don't you go back to a story from earlier this week that may seem like weird news to some people, and that is the shift in populations that are going on in front of our eyes. You may not even have noticed them, but now certain states in the Southwest are more populated than the states in the Midwest. And this is not without its implications. This is not without its problems. We'll talk about the implications of these population shifts. Who's leaving what cities and why? what cities are going to be left with hardly anybody in them coming up, and that may change a lot of things. And then also what that might mean too for our security. And then we'll get to open lines on the way on Coast to Coast. We'll also give you a little update coming up on what's happening on the hour in Japan with the meltdown as it continues on Coast to Coast, giving George Norrie a night off. This is Ian Punnett. All right, so it's Coast to Coast AM in for George Norrie tonight. This is Ian Punnett. Tomorrow night, we'll be spending a little more time with the zombies, international politics and zombies, asking the question, how effective would global governance be in combating the undead? We'll also have as our first hour guest, released in part tomorrow night, Steven Yeun, one of the stars of The Walking Dead on AMC's The Walking Dead. But we think about the United Nations Security Council, the World Health Organization, the International Organization for Migration. Would any of these governing bodies really be able to help in the era of the differently animated? That's the question. And would you have to create a new coordinating body, perhaps a world zombie organization, a WZO, in order to handle all of the overlapping health, trade, and security issues? We'll get to all of them coming up tomorrow night on Coast to Coast. But tonight there is a migration going on, and it's from the Midwest to the Southwest. Pulled by Hispanic growth in the Southwest, the West is now home to the four fastest growing states, Nevada, Arizona, Utah, and Idaho, and has surpassed the Midwest in total population. And yet, that's going to present some problems, especially when it comes to natural resources. We'll talk about that coming up next with the guy who's watching these population shifts, and then we'll tell you more about what's going on in Japan and get to your open line calls on any subject you want on the way. On Coast to Coast, this is Ian Punnett. Dr. Steve Murdoch is the founding director of the Hobby Center for the Study of Texas, but he's the perfect guy to talk about the population shifts that are going on even as we speak in the United States right now, because, as I understand it, you graduated from North Dakota State University, and then you got the heck out of there and ended up in Texas. Is that right, Dr. Murdoch?
Oh, that's correct. Thank you.
Okay.
I'm a native North Dakota.
Yeah. So NoDak is cool, but, you know, it's not exactly one of those hot spots. It's not a population growth hotspot. And we're seeing what's happening, this huge shift in the population to the Southwest or the West from the Midwest, including the fastest growing states. Are they ready for this, Dr. Murdoch?
Well, this is a fairly long-term pattern, actually. We've seen this shift going on over the last century. You know, we started the 20th century in 1900. About 62% of the population was in the Northeast and Midwest, and about 38% was in the South and the West. And as of this census, 40% is in the Northeast and Midwest, and 60% is in the South and the West. So this shift has been going for a while, and it certainly is a very strong trend.
Yeah, but you know what? That doesn't exactly answer my question. Are they ready for this? Do they have the infrastructure, the water, the necessary resources to support the interests of all of these people moving into those areas?
Well, I'm not an expert on all the natural resources involved, but certainly I think that most of these states have been preparing for some time for population increases, and they're certainly handling those populations that they have today.
Well, you know, the big problem, of course, they're leaving behind these, sadly, and I mean this because a lot of these are really beautiful cities, but they're seeing these population drops in Cincinnati, Cleveland, Detroit, of course, has been the subject of many stories, but even in Chicago. And a lot of the people that are leaving these northern so-called Rust Belt cities are African Americans. They're pulling out too, right?
Well, we're seeing African Americans, you know, in the middle of this last century, we're moving into from the south to the north, and we're now seeing a north to south migration pattern for African Americans. A city that is a very good example of that is Atlanta. Atlanta has had a very substantial increase
sure.
in population as a result of that shift.
the Black Mecca. And it's a very cool city. I lived in Atlanta for a long time, and it is a city that sees, I mean, I think the numbers, the one time I saw it, I think this number floats around, but at some point, only 17% of the people that lived in Atlanta were from Atlanta. Everybody else had moved in at some point in their lifetime. That's how fast the population was growing. But okay, so what are the implications for these population shifts? What are demographers like you, what do you see in this, and what does it say about the future of our country?
Well, I think this has been a dramatic shift in this decade, but it's one that's been coming for a while. And what we've seen, I think there's a couple of things besides the regional growth patterns that you've noted. I think there's also a tremendous change in the composition and the characteristics of our population. And probably the one of those I think that you're seeing most press about is the change in the racial and ethnic composition. We saw an increase this decade of 27 million people in the United States. Non-Hispanic whites increased by about 2.3 million. By comparison, the number of Hispanics increased by about 15.2 million. African-Americans about 3.7, and Asians about 5.3 million. So we are increasingly a diverse America, and the data from this particular census verify that in nearly every place across the country. In 34 of the 50 states, for example, the increase, absolute numerical increase in the Hispanic population was greater than the increase in the Anglo population. So you're seeing tremendous changes that are occurring in many of the places, particularly in the Southwest, where you talked about that growth resulting from the Hispanic population is primarily natural increase. That is the excess of births over deaths. It's not migration or immigration.
It's not migration. It's just regular. It's just a natural process. Now, you traditionally, or what can we expect will happen with the cities that these people leave behind? They are perfectly nice looking cities covered in snow and ice, you know, for many months out of the year. But how will they be able to survive, and what can they do to attract people back?
Well, I think, you know, you see shifts across the country, and we've seen them since the beginning of the nation's founding. Certainly, if an area loses too many people, it's a problem for that area. It's a concern. It's something that requires that they look at what their job base is, look at what their infrastructure is, look at what their industrial composition is, and try to find jobs and industries that will provide jobs that will maintain their population. One of the advantages that the South and West has had is a lot of land and new infrastructure to develop. In other words, it's much cheaper, it's much easier to develop housing, for example, in an area that has never had any housing in it than it is to go into an area and refurbish it, change the infrastructure, put in new streets, etc. That's much more costly than it is putting it in the first time. And so I think that the South and West has gained in part from the fact that it has been a easier place, a less expensive place to develop the infrastructure for large populations. That plus the fact, I think, that the environmental, so to speak, in this sense, the weather patterns and so forth have been ones that have attracted many people as well. People tend to like to be a little bit warmer.
We're losing a little bit on that cell phone on that last sentence. Let me just ask you, California, Texas are the two states that are really seeing a big increase, comprising more than 1/4 of the nation's total gains just since the year 2000. How many is too many for Texas and California to hold?
Well, I don't think there's a good answer for that. There's an answer that depends upon the technology that we have and the infrastructure that we have. If you look at the infrastructure we had in 1900, probably both would be having some difficulty. But remember that both are very, very large physical states. Texas, of course, is second in physical size only to Alaska. California is as well a very large state. So you have states that have a lot of land in which people can live. I think the bigger problems for both of those on, and I think doing, in the case of Texas, certainly I think meeting the challenges in areas like water and the distribution of that water across Texas.
Yeah, there's a lot of people in the Midwest who are saying, that's fine, you can go, don't take the water with you, water stays behind. But I know that when the population shifts, there'll be other people who will be continuing to look at the Great Lakes as a national resource that they would like to be able to tap into, not a local resource, but one that everybody should be able to have. Let me ask you about the about what this means, though, for the heartland. America's heartland traditionally was the Midwest.
Yes, you're finding, I mean, if you look at the Midwest and you look at the Great Plains of the United States, both are suffering in the sense there are many areas that have very, very slow population growth. Many counties that are having decline. And we've seen this pattern going on for a very long period of time, particularly in agricultural areas in the Great Plains and in the Midwest, because agriculture has been one of the most successful industries in substituting technology for labor. And so as you needed less people to get the same or even more productivity from the land, many of those rural areas simply left and went on to live in other parts of the country.
Yeah, but there's a composition to that. There's a certain, the America's heartland, somehow the Midwest was seen as sort of a fulcrum on which the coasts were balanced, that you had a kind of common sense of the Midwest, which was used as a barometer to measure, you know, like the old expression, will it play in Peoria? You know, it's sort of a way of knowing whether, you know, how does the heartland feel about this? How will America's heartland shift if it moves to the West or the Southwest? What will be the defining characteristics of America's heartland when it's no longer in the Midwest? And it's comprised, if America's heartland or the population, if it's comprised of kind of a different kind of diversity than the Midwest?
Well, I think it may change, but it may not be any less good. It'll be different. Certainly it'll be different. But I think if you look at countries that change, or countries changed a lot at one point in time, people would have said, well, what it's going to be like when it moves away from New York and Philadelphia and Boston. That happened. The country survived, and the country gained additional focus.
Sure.
Didn't lose those, just gained one. But I think that's what you're having now.
Well, but you see, I think there's not different. To me, there's a difference. And I'm talking about the character, because there's a certain about the Midwest. And yeah, you're a NODAC guy. So, you know, there's a kind of a sensibility, a kind of stability, a sense of not buying into every trend. And that's sort of an interesting way of kind of getting an idea of what will play in America. And it just seems to me that the Southwest and the West has a different kind of sensibility than that. So I was just trying to, if we shift away from that, if we put the population in a different group, how will that change the character of the United States? That's kind of what I was looking at.
Yeah, I'm not sure that there's a clear-cut answer to that. I think that the country is increasingly similar in many ways from coast to coast, in the sense that our technology, our communication has certainly made us one people in many, many, many ways. But yes, there are very unique patterns. One of the patterns that's clearly been there, you can basically say in America now for the last several decades that if you are not diverse in terms of your population, you're not growing. And so if you look at, let's take some of the Midwest and take a state like Iowa, very, very fine place to live, but one that is having some difficulty in patterns of population growth. And one that is going to be increasingly older.
Right.
We have kind of two patterns going on in the United States.
Fair enough. Go ahead. No, please.
Yeah. We have what we call non-Hispanic white or Anglo population is what we call it in this part of the country. That is been had fertility that was below replacement levels now for at least a couple decades. It is a population that's getting older, and it is a population from which is not going to get a lot of it immigration from Europe, because Europe is the slowest growing part of the world, and the only region of the world that the United Nations projects to lose population between now and 2050. That population, which is across the country, of course, important in every part of the country, economically, politically, every other way, is, however, a decreasing part of our population.
Okay.
You know, if you looked at the population growth, for example, in this particular decade, the percent of it that came from non-Hispanic white population was 8%. 55% came from the Hispanic population, about 14% from the African-American population, and almost 20% came from the Asian population. Now, those changes are neither good nor bad in and of themselves, but they indicate a change in our population base from north to south and
sure.
to west. And basically, again, if you don't have a diverse population in the United States because of the demographics behind that non-Hispanic white population, and on the other hand, the demographics behind these other rapidly growing populations, they're younger than the non-Hispanic white population. Their birth rates are higher. And so you have a sense an older Anglo or non-Hispanic white population and the younger minority populations in the United States, somewhat differentially distributed. And those are certainly impacting growth rates across the country.
Well, very good. Well, appreciate that. There's a little bit more on this story about the major population shifts that are going on in the United States and what we can expect in the near future. And that leaves me a little time here at the top of the hour to get an update in about Japan. Thank you so much, Professor Steve Murdoch. And thank you for your time. Don't be surprised if when we know more about some of the details about the population shifts coming up that you get a call back from us. And thank you so much for giving us your time tonight. So open lines, you can go anywhere you want to go with this. We ran the Bigfoot story earlier in the hour, weird news, both at AOL.com and on coasttocoast.com. And then coming up too, throughout the night, we may be finding out more about what's happening in Japan. Earlier this evening, the reports are that the Japanese government is continuing to undersell the significance of the threat, that we are looking at a large part of Japan that may be uninhabitable forever, or roughly forever as far as any of us and our grandchildren are concerned, and some period of time after that. The death toll has officially risen above 10,000, which is very sad. And there are many brave people that continue to fight the radiation leaks that are now pouring out of these reactors. But as Coast to Coast legend Michio Kaku said on Good Morning America earlier today, nobody's trusting the Japanese assessments of how bad the situation is. Nobody can trust just how bad the situation is right now. The water has disappeared. No more water is going into some of these reactors. The meltdown or the partial meltdown continues. Just a week ago, we were talking with James Childs, who is, you know, written the book Inviting Disaster, who studies this. And he said he was expecting that they'd be able to probably contain it. It wasn't going to be a worst case scenario. Well, now it seems like all of the experts agree it is turning into a worst case scenario. And nobody knows exactly what it's going to mean for the planet. Honest to God, we've never faced anything like this. It's still not quite as bad as the meltdown. As far as we know, it's still not quite as bad as the meltdown at Chernobyl, except that the meltdown at Chernobyl was much more contained at this point in the story than the Japanese nuclear power plants in Fukushima, Japan. Those power plants right now still melting down, and there's still more than one of them. So they have six of them. Three of them are really in play, and there is just no way of predicting how bad it's going to be. And maybe that's just one of the story threads you want to pick up on when we go to open lines coming up next on Coast to Coast. Also then coming up tomorrow night, I think the story of the tsunami, the international reaction toward the tsunami, The international coalition that has come together to try to stop Muammar Gaddafi are two ways of looking at how our international governments will either work or not work to stop the impending zombie apocalypse. It is coming, you know. As we always know, whenever Hollywood runs a bunch of movies on a particular theme, you can pretty much book it that whatever that theme is means it actually will start happening. So with the success of The Walking Dead and with the success of any number of zombie books, you can expect we will have a zombie apocalypse. How can we be better prepared? We'll talk about that coming up tomorrow night. In for George Norrie. Before we get to open lines, this is Ian Punnett on Coast to Coast.